With Chicago getting pounded by a foot of snow tonight, I think all the snow that we had here in New York has shifted over to Chicago. So from what I'm hearing from people who are there, it's kind of a mess over there in the Windy City. But with the bad weather bearing down, the AEW fans who trekked out to the building tonight for the show were treated to a 30-minute pay-per-view caliber main event between the hometown boy CM Punk going one-on-one against MJF, their very first meeting for all the weeks that they have been building this matchup. Tonight was the very first time that these two have touched and locked horns in any kind of meaningful way. Pretty much for the most part, I think they've kept these two apart. There was one segment where Punk almost had him and grabbed his scarf. Otherwise, they have kept the physicality to nil between these two. So tonight was the first time that these two climbed into the ring together one-on-one in a physical way. And it was all about the main event tonight show. That's really what this entire program was built around. And so if you did not like the main event, you probably came away from this Dynamite thinking that it was a show. I came away from this Dynamite thinking it was a very good show because I thought it was an excellent main event. And I know some people were not a fan of the main event. They thought maybe it went a little too long. They gave these guys 40 minutes from entrances to the final bell. So the actual match went about half an hour, a little over half an hour. I believe it went through three commercial breaks. We've seen longer matches on TV. We saw two of them, in fact. We saw one with Bryan Danielson and Hangman Page where they went an hour. And I thought that was an excellent match. I thought the rematch, which was shorter, was an excellent match. And I thought tonight was an excellent match as well. But it was not a night without controversy. The other match that was promoted heavily for tonight was Jon Moxley going one-on-one against someone who had just recently asked for his WWE release and was recently granted that release as Ali weeps somewhere from home. Actually, I think he's from Chicago. He might have been at the show tonight. He might have been hidden away in the crowd in disguise. Brian Kendrick was being brought in for a match tonight against Jon Moxley. Earlier today on social media, there was a video that started circulating from some documentary. It looked like, I don't know, I don't want to fucking know, with comments from Brian Kendrick that looked like it was from a number of years ago. And that kicked off this whole controversy that just snowballed into something that a little over an hour before we went on the air tonight for Dynamite at 8 o'clock forced Tony Khan to go on Twitter and announce that he was pulling Brian Kendrick from the show tonight. Why? I'm going to get into why. We'll talk about that and we'll talk about this entire show. This is your AEW Dynamite review for WWE Day, Groundhog Day, February 2nd, 2022. I am the Solemn Monster. Hit that like button. Super chats are open. We got a couple of new ones, which are listed down below in the description. Bully the Clown is in there. There's a Solemn Monster Bushwhacker one. There's a whole bunch of different ones. So if you're interested in those, that is where you can find them. They're down below. A little bit later on in the stream, those of you who took part in our annual Royal Rumble pool, we do one every year. This was the 9th annual Solemn Monster Sounds Off Royal Rumble pool in the private group on Facebook. And I got to give a shout out to Zach Holker, who puts this thing together every year and hits a home run and knocks it out of the park. He and Julian Cannon. We had over 1,600 entries this year, 49 pools. Two winners per pool, one for the men's rumble, one for the women's rumble. And so what we're going to do later in the stream when the review is over is I'm going to be picking three winners. Third place, second place, first place. Get prizes. The ultimate rumble pool, a collection of all the winners from Saturday night. And I'll pick out three winners. First place winner gets $75 donated by Julian Cannon. Second place winner gets any two Solemn Monster shirts from Pro Wrestling Tees as donated by Zach. And the third place winner, any one Solemn Monster shirt from the store. So we'll be doing that a little bit later on in the stream, so you could stay tuned for that. Why don't we get into the Kendrick stuff first? Because this was, I can't even say it was the big story of the day. Because honestly, it wasn't. The big story of the day was the Shane McMahon story. But we're not going to talk about Shane McMahon right now. I'm going to have a lot more to say about him on the podcast this Sunday. But the other big story developed late in the day, as I was mentioning. Brian Kendrick asked for his WWE release 2 months ago. He's been working behind the scenes for them when they brought him back many years ago. If you remember, he was part of the Cruiserweight Classic. And he was wrestling on 205 Live, and he was wrestling for the Cruiserweight Championship. And so that is what they brought him back for after many years away from the company. In recent years, he's been working as a producer behind the scenes. He's been down at the Performance Center. If you remember a few weeks ago on NXT, Harland threw him down a flight of stairs. And by the way, Harland, Parker Boudreaux, on his Twitter page during Dynamite Tonight, posted the clip from NXT a month ago, whatever it was. He posted that 20-second clip of him grabbing Kendrick by the neck and throwing him down a flight of stairs. That was a top-tier tweet from Harland. Perfectly timed. But they were building to a confrontation between the two of them the following week on NXT, or a couple of weeks later on NXT. And the match never happened. The confrontation never happened. And there was no real explanation as to why. That coincided with a COVID outbreak. So a lot of people, myself included, thought, okay, maybe he got COVID, whatever, and maybe he did. I don't know. But we never saw him again. And then word came out that after Scotty Too Hotty had asked for his, he also wanted his release from WWE. And so it was granted, and almost just immediately, Tony Khan announced that it would be Brian Kendrick against Jon Moxley on the show tonight. I don't know exactly when Kendrick got his release. You would think there's some kind of non-compete, you know, even if it's for 30 days. So that tells me that he may have gotten the release weeks ago. And we only found out about it recently. I don't know how that whole situation works. But Tony Khan was very quick to announce this match. And then at about 6:45 in the evening tonight, Tony Khan tweeted this, and I'll put the tweet up on screen. This is from AEW President Tony Khan. Said that we've been made aware of abhorrent and offensive comments made in the past by Brian Kendrick. There is no room in AEW for the views expressed by Brian. We think it's best for all that Brian be pulled from tonight's card as we gather more information. We will announce a replacement bout ASAP. Now, the thing about Kendrick, and I mean, a lot of people have probably known over the years, you know, he said some cuckoo things before. He's a conspiracy nut. Brian Kendrick is or was a conspiracy nut. In fact, in an interview with High Spots that he did back in 2013, he even said that his own wife, you know, I don't know if he's still married or married to the same person, but he said his wife even would ignore his rants at times because he would just go off. Everything to him is a conspiracy. Everything to him. If he drops the remote control at home, all is a conspiracy. The Martian man who lives in the attic above, he caused me to drop the remote control. The guy's out of his fucking mind. There's stuff, though, that came out that even I was not aware of. And clearly, Tony Khan was not aware of it or else he wouldn't have touched this guy with a 10-foot pole. For people who talk about conspiracy theories and, you know, that's kind of funny or whatever, that guy's a little out of his mind, we find out tonight that it goes a little bit deeper and it goes a little bit darker when it comes to stuff that Brian Kendrick has said before. And the stuff that really got people's attention and the stuff that really got him in trouble were comments he made about things like the Sandy Hook Elementary School Massacre. And I'm not going to repeat everything that he said because it's not worth it. But he had very strange views on Sandy Hook. He had very strange views on Zionist medics who arrived in Haiti after an earthquake and they were scavenging, you know, to gather up eyeballs to do what with them? I have no idea. Eyeballs and body parts and, you know, talking about the Holocaust and how it's overblown and there's evidence that the Allies, you know, were, you know, concocting, you know, certain camps, all this just ridiculous, nonsensical bullshit. When you start dabbling in lies about things like Sandy Hook, and the Holocaust. You are not a very bright person. You are not a very bright person. There was someone on Twitter who replied to someone who had posted some of the stuff he said about the Holocaust, and they said, oh, is that why he and Paul London don't seem very close anymore? And I thought it was very telling that one of the first people who liked that person's tweet asking the question was Paul London. So I think we may have our answer there as far as that goes. I wasn't aware that there was any kind of falling out between them, but apparently we have a bit of an answer there. It is interesting to me how this all blows up and this all comes out. Yeah, this has been there for years. This stuff goes to interviews and comments he made 9, 10 years ago. We're going back a decade now. And it is interesting to me how, you know, for all the little things you may have heard about Kendrick over the years, I certainly was not aware of some of his more extreme views. This is the first time that I'm hearing about a lot of this stuff. It's revolting. It's disgusting. It's embarrassing. It's embarrassing almost more than anything, because that a grown, mature human being would even buy into some of this shit. More than anything, it's pathetic. It really is embarrassing. If I were him, I would be ashamed that somebody would think I would take anything like that seriously. But apparently he did. So really, for him, I would think it's embarrassing more than anything else. But very interesting that of all days, it turns up today when he is supposed to make his debut in this match against Moxley on Dynamite. You can make of that what you will. But the reality is, these are real things that he said that he seemed to be serious about. He wasn't joking around. He wasn't, you know, saying it in a comedic fashion or. You know, anything like that. These are real comments that he made that are on video or that are in text that people can go back and find. The reality is there's no excusing it. There's no excusing it. Now, has Brian Kendrick grown since then? Does he still believe in some of the bullshit that he was spewing back then? If he has grown since then, good on him. For his part, during tonight's show, Kendrick responded. He went on his official Twitter account. This is what he had to say. I apologize for all the hurt and embarrassment I have caused with my words. These are not my beliefs and never were beliefs of mine, and I crossed the line. I spread the most vile comments without thinking of the damage it would cause. I will live with this regret for the rest of my life. I am truly very sorry for the pain that I have caused. So that is from Brian Kendrick. So he claims that he never believed in all of that stuff. And I know people are going to second guess that. You know, people are going to be like, well, of course you say that now, but these were your comments then. It wasn't like you were a child. You know, this is in the last decade that he said these things. Good on him for posting any kind of apology. I'll just say that much. Good on him for posting it. He had to. If he wants to work in any capacity for a major promotion, whether it's WWE or AEW, ever again, posting what he posted tonight was mandatory. It was absolutely necessary. And I would think he's smart enough to at least understand that. So whatever his motives were, this is something that had to happen if he wants to be gainfully employed at some point by a major promotion here in this country. So he posted that a little bit earlier. I hope he's sincere in what he said, but even still, Tony Khan made the right decision. Tony Khan pulling him from the card tonight was the right decision to make. He had no other choice. This was not going to go away. This was not something that he could just sweep under the rug and act like, well, nobody is going to, you know, bring it up. Almost like the Big Swole stuff, right? Let's just pretend that didn't happen and not address it. We'll just ignore it. He couldn't do that with. You're about to go on the air live on TBS in front of a million people, and you're promoting this guy in one of the featured matches on this card in front of a, I don't know if they were sold out or not. Even if they were sold out, they didn't have a packed building tonight because there's a fucking snowstorm hitting Chicago. In fact, I got two emails from people tonight telling me they were going to go. One of them was going to bring a sign, and they were like, they're not going anywhere because the roads are too dangerous. But you had a lot of people in that building tonight in Chicago. You had people watching on television. And it would have been a terrible decision on Tony Khan's part to just put him out there anyway. It probably would have gotten pretty ugly, I would imagine. You have people in the crowd who are well aware of what's going on. They've been following along on social media today. How are you going to put this guy on live television the day that this breaks and becomes a big story? He made the decision that he had to make. He didn't fire him. If you look at the comment that Tony Khan made, nowhere in there does he say that we fired him, we got rid of him, we released him. We don't even know if Brian Kendrick was under contract. Probably not. We didn't get the official graphic that says Brian Kendrick is all elite. For all we know, he was being brought in for a one shot. Maybe it would have led to something. He may not even be under contract. How can you fire someone who isn't even under contract? So all the people saying Tony Khan was wrong to do what he did, he fired him. He didn't fire anybody. All he did was pull him from the card and say, we need more time to gather information and investigate this and look into this. They pulled him from the match. He didn't fire anybody. You know, Brian Kendrick is free to believe whatever the hell he wants to believe in, just as Tony Khan is free to employ whoever he wants to employ and not employ whoever he does not feel like employing. Kendrick is apologetic. I hope he's sincere. There is no excusing the comments that he made. They're fucking disgusting. There's no excusing what he said. I think he is embarrassed, frankly, by what he said, as he should be. There's no excusing those comments. And if he really does believe those things, if he still deep down believes in some of the things that he said, he's a fucking moron. And if you believe a lot of the shit that he was saying, then you're a fucking moron too. But that's why Brian Kendrick was pulled from the show tonight. Will we see him again in AEW? My bet is no. But him posting that apology tonight, if for no other reason, he has to realize that that was a necessary step if he wants to work for a major company again. So instead of kicking off with Jon Moxley against Brian Kendrick, we kicked off with Jon Moxley against Wheeler Yuta of Best Friends. He was the replacement, accompanied to the ring by Orange Cassidy and by Danhausen. I don't know if Danhausen is officially now with Best Friends or not, or maybe they just sent him out there because, they felt they had a match advertised. They pulled it. Didn't know how the crowd might react. So let's send Danhausen out there and make the people happy. Yuta threw a drop kick when the bell sounded. Moxley sidestepped it. And he applied a sleeper hold on the outside of the ring. Yuta escaped, hit a shotgun drop kick. Moxley spiked Yuta on his head on the apron and rolled him back inside the ring. And he shared a little bit of a moment with Orange Cassidy, did Jon Moxley. And then when he turned around, waiting for him was Danhausen, who did his Danhausen pose. I can't do it the way he does it, but he did his Danhausen pose, which briefly distracted Moxley, and Yuta took advantage by diving onto him. In the ring, Yuta avoided the paradigm shift, went up top, hit a splash for a near fall. Moxley eventually, though, came back and hit the paradigm shift and scored the pin. I thought that the match was okay. Obviously, they didn't have a whole lot of time to put this together, given the fact that an hour before the show, the match was going to be completely different. So they put together the match. Look, I'm sure Moxley and Kendrick, that must have been weird, because I would imagine Kendrick was at the building. So, they had that awkward conversation and probably sent him home. I would imagine that Kendrick was already there, and he probably put this whole match together with Moxley, and they had to junk it and throw it away. So these guys had an hour to put together something, and that's what they put together. Doesn't matter, though. I was more interested in what came after the match. The match itself doesn't even matter. The match itself doesn't matter. It's what happened after the match that matters. Bryan Danielson, as Moxley is celebrating his win, Bryan Danielson comes out to confront him in the ring, and he's applauding him. He has a microphone and he says to the fans, is this the match that you want to see? And of course they all chant, yes, they want to see it. Danielson says that he wanted to fight Moxley for a long time because he was different. And he said that we've seen a new Jon Moxley since he came back. He said he wanted to test Moxley and he watched him when he was the AEW World Champion. He believes that Jon Moxley is the greatest AEW champion the company has ever had. Danielson said he thinks Moxley would still be the champion if he had some support. And he realized that they shouldn't be fighting against each other. He believes they should be fighting alongside each other. They should be fighting side by side, as partners, as friends. He said he knows everybody in the building loves AEW, but there's no reason that a millennial cowboy should be the AEW champion. And there's no reason that somebody dressed up as a dinosaur should be the AEW tag team champion. And he said there's no reason for any of that to happen. There's no reason that he and Moxley can't run the place together. And he said that they could take a guy like Wheeler Yuta and put him under their wing. They could grab Daniel Garcia away from 2.0. He said they could take someone like Lee Moriarty under their wing. And he told Moxley that even if the crowd doesn't like him, they do like what he's talking about. And they cheered. And he said, told Moxley that it was a lot to put on his plate. He didn't need to answer right away, but he did want him to think about the possibilities of what they could create, the legacy that these two could create together. What legacy does Moxley want to leave? I love the idea of a Danielson faction with some of the younger AEW stars, even just a couple of young AEW stars under his belt. This is the same idea that he talked about weeks ago. He was doing media, and I even, you know, I talked about it on the one of the streams and I on the podcast too. And I said I love the idea, and he specifically singled out Daniel Garcia. There's something about Daniel Garcia. I think he sees a little bit of himself in him, and Daniel Garcia, as young as he is very good. He's been featured a lot. He's got more main events than he probably should already in his young career. So we already know that Danielson really would like to have a group of his own that he could put together and have some of those younger guys. I never really thought about the idea of him and Moxley being part of the same faction and you know, running a group like that together. I still think the match for Revolution next month is going to be Danielson against Moxley. I do believe it's going to be Danielson against Moxley. Could they challenge for the tag team titles? Could we have a Jungle Boy Luchasaurus match against Moxley and Danielson? Yeah, I think we could. But I'm looking at this and thinking, okay, Moxley is either going to reject his offer or he's going to be a little wishy-washy on it. We end up getting a match between them at Revolution. And depending on how that goes, coming out of it, we may well end up with this group that Danielson was teasing, maybe coming out of the match that the two of them have next month. So you could get a big match out of it, and then you end up with an alliance of sorts between the two of them. And maybe they do bring in Daniel Garcia. Maybe they do bring in another young guy. I wouldn't be against that idea. I actually think it would be something kind of different. I mean, kind of in the same vein, I guess, as what Jericho was going for in the Inner Circle, although I always got the impression Jericho was, especially as this Inner Circle stuff is dragged on for so long, he's kind of just latching on to those guys. But it would be kind of a similar concept where Jericho was the veteran and he was looking for younger, newer talent to attach himself to and to try to help elevate. It kind of worked with Sammy. It has not worked with Santana and Ortiz. I was going to say Eddie Kingston. It has not really worked with Santana and Ortiz, but it would be kind of the same concept. I'm intrigued by the idea. I do not hate that idea. But I do think we are still going to get the match of Revolution next month. Even though there is really no obvious number one. I mean, they have rankings. I don't know offhand who the number one contenders are for the tag titles. I know they're doing the angle with the Gun Club right now. The Gun Club's not winning the fucking belts. That'll be blown off in the next few weeks. After the Gun Club, you know, who knows? Maybe if these two come together, they could be next in line. Win a couple of matches on TV first. It's possible. But I think the bigger match you got to do is the singles match. So we had everybody's favorite. I know everybody in the chat is dying. Is dying every week to see Brandi Rhodes. Hey, Tuxedo says that Jake Hager isn't mentioned. Jake Hager should never be mentioned. Jake Hager is just there. I don't know where he is lately. I don't care. We don't need to talk about Jake Hager. There's nothing exciting about Jake Hager. Jake Hager could fade away. So Brandi Rhodes was out next in the ring, and she thanked the crowd for being so nice to her. Oh, you're being so nice to me here in Chicago. She wouldn't feel that way in a minute. This brought out Dan Lambert with the Men of the Year. I was hoping they dropped this angle. They did that stupid segment on Dynamite. It might have been the final show last year, right? They were at Daly's place, I think, when they did it. They did that segment where Brandy was teasing a fight or a match with Lambert. And, you know, I mean, who wants to see this? Who wants to see this? What is this? You know, Medusa and Heyman back in the day or whatever. It was Medusa and somebody. I think Medusa and Heyman or Cornette. That's not what this is. Nobody wants to see that. If they say they are, they're lying. So I was hoping this was quietly dropped, but then here we go. They're revisiting it here on this show. Lambert accused her of believing her own bullshit. He said that they may have given her a reality show, but he was going to give her a reality check. He said he actually felt like a decent person standing next to her. And after every comment he would make, he was being cheered like a babyface. So it really says something, I think, about how the crowds feel about her and Cody to an extent, but her, when you turn Dan Lambert babyface. People do not like Dan Lambert. If Dan Lambert comes out during any other segment, as he did later in the show, they boo him because he's annoying and because he's a prick and they want to see him get his ass beaten. But when he's in the ring with Brandi Rhodes, if I had to put a percentage on it as far as, you know, percentage crowd in favor of him as compared to her, at least here in Chicago. I mean, what was it? 90-10, probably. And I think that might be generous. But there were a few good lines in this segment. Brandy said that Ethan Page was in the ring, and she told Ethan Page, the only reason we hired you was to get Josh Alexander. For those who have no idea what she's talking about, because not everybody is an Impact fan, Josh Alexander and Ethan Page were a tag team at Impact. They were the tag team champions. Very good tag team, called the North. So she completely buried him. Completely buried Ethan Page with that comment. She was then cut off by chance of shut the fuck up. In case you couldn't tell how this crowd felt about Brandi Rhodes. She was cut off not once, but twice. Interrupted by chance of shut the fuck up. Didn't look like she was expecting them either. Kind of flustered her a little bit. She went back at it. They tried to drown her out again, but she kept going. She said Lambert's best fighter lost to Jake Paul. She brought up Amanda Nunes and said, oh, you know, we won't go there. I know that's a bit of a soft spot, sore spot with you. Lambert said it was time for the whole family to go heel, the Rhodes family, because the only face turn anybody would pay or that anybody would buy from her is returning to her old job of going face down. Brandy slapped him. He said he thought that she might be in a fighting mood tonight, and so they prepared for this. And they looked to the tunnel, they looked to the entranceway, and here comes Paige Van Zandt. And all of a sudden, my attitude shifted on this entire segment, and I thought, this is a little more tolerable now that we, because remember, I was a big fan of Paige Van Zandt coming in. I thought they were going to do more with her. She made a few appearances, and then we never saw her again. And I was like, well, that sucks. So here she was. She was back here tonight. They were separate. She got in the ring and Brandy came at her and she grabbed Brandy. I was waiting for Brandy Rhodes to like double leg her and have to watch Paige Van Zandt selling for Brandy Rhodes. Thankfully, they didn't do that yet. I'm not so sure it's not coming like Veer. But the women's locker room came out to separate them, put them in separate corners. I like that it looks like Paige Van Zandt is going to wrestle because I think that she could have a real aptitude for this. I could be wrong, but I think she might have an aptitude for this sort of thing. But as I think about this, I then realize that if she does wrestle, her opponent is going to be Brandi Rhodes. And not only is her opponent going to be Brandi Rhodes, there is a very distinct possibility that Brandi Rhodes will beat Paige Van Zandt. At the very least, Paige Van Zandt is going to have to sell for Brandi Rhodes. One of the great things about Shane McMahon no longer being in WWE and no longer being part of WrestleMania plans this year is that I won't have to watch his horrible offense and I won't have to watch him throw his horrible phantom punches. I don't need to see Paige Van Zandt having to sell for Brandi Rhodes. And that's my biggest fear. So honestly, this isn't something I care to see. The Brandi Rhodes stuff, I have to say, I'm sure she's a lovely woman. I interviewed her once on the podcast. She seems like a lovely person. The Brandi Rhodes stuff on television is god-awful. And my first thought as I saw her come out for another one of these segments that is building to a match, like a totally random match, it just feels like something that exists to feed her ego. Like she has to be part of the show, so we have to come up with something. We'll carve out something for her to do. But why does she have to be on the show right now? You know, they're coming up with these segments for her. One of the issues that we've talked about, and one of the issues that I get a lot of emails about, and you guys ask me about this a lot, is Tony Khan signing too much talent? Does Tony Khan have a surplus of talent in AEW? All right, we've talked about possible contracts coming up soon that aren't going to be renewed, but he doesn't fire people unless there's a disciplinary reason to do so, but he's signing more talent today alone. Think of all the WWE names that are free. You know how many of them posted tweets today? I'm free, I'm free. You would think that they were released early from their prison sentence. There's a lot of people who just became free agents this week, and there's going to be a lot more who become free agents in a few weeks after leaving WWE or being cut from WWE. Now, he's not going to go out and sign all of them, but I guarantee you we're going to see names like Keith Lee and maybe Ember Moon and people like that pop up in AEW. Johnny Gargano, who knows? John Morrison, maybe. If Keith Lee does come in, maybe Mia Yim comes in. There's going to be a handful of names that come in on top of all the other names that they already have. Now, Jay Lethal is wrestling on Rampage next week. Holy shit. For a second there, I had completely forgotten about him. He's going to be wrestling for the FTW title against Ricky Starks. But Jay Lethal is one of many that Tony Khan has signed, and they barely get any television time. So for all the people that they have on that roster under contract, and the roster is, it's becoming bloated. I mean, they're signing a lot of talent. Think of all the people who never get FaceTime on this show, but we have to make time for fucking Brandi Rhodes to go out and get her segment with Dan Lambert. Would that time not be better suited to use some of that other talent that you've signed? I think Dan Lambert is someone who could absolutely be used to get heat with somebody else, with some of that talent that you've signed that's just sitting around with nothing to do. Would that not be a better use of this time? Do we really need to have the Brandi Rhodes segment on this show now every week building to, you know, whatever fucking match they're going to end up doing? It just doesn't seem to me like a wise use of television time. Is she some kind of big ratings draw that I'm not aware of? That's the biggest glaring issue to me. All the talent they have. Only so many segments, only so much television time, and this is what you're going to waste it on? There was a backstage segment. Matt Hardy, Isaiah Cassidy, Mark Quinn, The Blade, The Butcher. Was The Butcher there? I don't know if The Butcher was there. The Bunny was there. They were being interviewed by Alex Marvez in a stairwell. Always in a stairwell. The Hardy family office always seems to be interviewed in the fucking staircase somewhere. I don't understand why. I don't know why that is. Hardy said Private Party failed to bring home the AEW tag team titles on Rampage last week. He said now he wants the TNT championship. Sammy Guevara is talking about an open challenge. He wants the TNT title. Andrade El Idolo and Jose showed up. Andrade noted that Private Party failed. Hardy said Isaiah Cassidy was going to face Sammy Guevara on Rampage this week. And he asked Andrade, how come Darby Allin hasn't signed with them yet? What's going on with Darby? What's the holdup here? And Andrade brought up offering him more money. And then he left. Hardy told Isaiah Cassidy, don't fail me. He was trying to hype him up. Andrade is still, he's still trying to get a conversation with Mr. Stink. I don't know if they're going to save it for Rampage or maybe they'll do something on Dynamite next week. I'm looking forward to this eventual meeting with Mr. Stink and Andrade. We'll never get old, by the way. Never get old hearing Andrade refer to Sting as Stink. Pac and Penta against Malakai Black and Brody King, the Kings of the Black Throne, was up next. Alex Abrahantes led Pac out to the ring with a bandage wrapped around his head, wrapped around his eyes, leading him down to the ring. And he started the match wearing the wrap, the bandage around his eyes, took down Malakai, pulled it off, and then revealed it was really just a put on. Pac and Penta executed stereo dives out onto each side of the ring. Penta out onto Brody King. And then, of course, Pac out onto Malakai Black. They went to a break. They come back. Pac tagged in Penta. He hit sling blades on Black and on King. And a backstabber followed that. Pac got a hot tag. Or not a hot tag, but a blind tag. No pun intended. He got a blind tag. Traded strikes with Malakai and then hit a German and a brainbuster for two. Penta took out Brody King with a plancha. And a step-up flip dive. So Death Triangle going for the fear factor. They're going to finish this off here. Brody pushed Pac off the top. Black used the black mist to blind Penta. I mean, he's wearing a mask, but he's got eye holes. And the heels hit their Dante's Inferno finish for the win. I thought it was a good match with the right team going over. This had to be a win for Malakai and for Brody. And I will say, you know, it's great to have Pac back on TV. I feel like every time he returns and every time he wrestles a match, he disappears again. And we don't see him for 6 weeks. So after tonight, I don't know what to expect. I don't know if he's going to be on TV next week. I don't know if we're going to miss him for a month. I have no idea. But for tonight, it was good to have him back on TV. Adam Cole was backstage, and he was in no mood. He was not happy after his lights out match, his loss to Orange Cassidy last week. And he said, I am still undefeated in singles competition here in AEW because, as we all know, in AEW, in an unsanctioned match, losses in those matches do not count against the win-loss record. So officially, he is still undefeated in this company. And he doesn't feel he gets the respect that he deserves. So on Rampage, he's going to face Evil Uno. And after that, we will all know what Adam Cole wants. He better destroy this fucking guy on Friday. I'm telling you, this guy, Adam Cole going in there against Evil Uno, he should not be wasting his time with Evil Uno. And if he's going to, this should not be a long match. Because I still see Adam Cole being able to challenge Hangman at Revolution for the championship. Hangman is going to win next week against Lance Archer. He's going to beat him. He's going to need a new opponent for next month. And I think the right opponent is Adam Cole. It may not feel like it at this moment. I know a lot of people were sour on him losing to Orange Cassidy last week. It's old news now. As far as I'm concerned, it's in the past. It's over. I didn't like that finish either, but it's over. He's not buried. It'd be very easy to rehab him and put him in a position to challenge for the title against Hangman Page next month. That will not happen if he is on television wrestling people like fucking Evil Uno. Or struggling in the ring against somebody like Evil Uno. So hopefully he will dispatch of him quickly on Friday. We had Ruby Soho against Nyla Rose. This was a rematch from the TBS title tournament. Matt wants to know whatever happened to Miro. Is he still stuck in the void? All I know is that Miro had an injury. I think some kind of a leg or a hamstring injury or something. And he was still nursing that. And when he is healed, he will be back. But yes, he is still trapped in the void somewhere. I don't know where, but he's got his hot, flexible wife at home to keep him company. There are worse places to be. Ruby Soho against Nyla Rose. Ruby attacked Nyla before the bell. Nyla crushed her with a lariat, and Nyla caught her with a Samoan drop, was in control heading into the break. They come back. Ruby is exchanging words with Vicky Guerrero outside the ring on the floor. That allowed Nyla to hit a spinebuster on the floor. In the ring, Ruby came back, hit the no future kick. Vicky, though, grabs Nyla's leg and at the last possible second places Nyla's leg under the bottom rope. Now, Aubrey Edwards was the referee. She's laying right there and it's very clear. I don't think she was supposed to see it, but plain as day. She saw Vicky Guerrero, even if it was out of the corner of her eye, clearly saw Vicky Guerrero placing the foot under the rope. Didn't really act like it. I think she was just pretending she didn't see it. She thought maybe she did it, but it didn't look good because clearly it was in her line of vision. But they don't really do DQs in this company, so who cares, right? Even if she had seen it, was she going to throw the match away? Maybe she would have ejected her from ringside. It's not like she was going to call for the disqualification, though. Let's be honest. They rarely do that in this company. But she broke the count, and Ruby went after Vicky. That allowed Nyla Rose to hit a backbreaker. Ruby went up for a top rope Hurricanrana. Rose stopped it. So when Ruby was trying to flip over, Nyla held on to her. And I'm not sure exactly what they were going for here. Now, part of me thinks that maybe she was supposed to give her a beast bomb off the ropes. I'm not sure. I mean, Ruby, she kind of shoved her. She fell down to the mat. And she went for her no future kick, completely whiffed on the kick. And again, I don't know if that was by design or if that was a botch. I think it was a botch. It didn't look good. But she missed her kick completely, landed face first, flat on her face. And Nyla came off the top with a flying senton right across the back, picked her up, hit the beast bomb for the win. Yeah, I thought the match was solid. I'm not a fan of Nyla winning. I'm no fan of that finish. Now, I have to assume, that this was done because they're going to have a third match, right? Ruby won the first one. Nyla wins the second one. They come back maybe at Revolution, and they do a third match. If they're doing that, it makes sense. Even still, I would rather not have seen Ruby lose this match here. The Gun Club, we were told by JR, had commandeered a camera crew. And we go to the back, and Billy Gunn and Colton Gunn and Austin Gunn, they're there. And they're mocking Jungle Boy, and I think he was reading a book, and they were saying, "You're reading the Jungle Book?" You know, and they're kind of mocking him there. And they end up attacking Jungle Boy when he starts fighting them. They fight back, and they throw him into the exit door. And there's the exit. So they're out of the building now. They're fighting into the street. Now remember, it's either snowing or about to snow in Chicago. You can see snow on the ground. So they brawl outside and they throw him into the snow. Always reminds me of the segment on Raw many years ago where Razor Ramon and Goldust, remember before the Royal Rumble in 96, they brawled out into the snow. There's a lot more snow in that segment. That's not really what this was, but that's kind of what it reminded me of. They threw him into the snow and then they ran off when Christian and Luchasaurus showed up, and that was the segment. We had Tony Schiavone in the ring to introduce the AEW World Champion, Hangman Adam Page. He asked Hangman about his Texas death match with Lance Archer, which is for the championship next Wednesday in Atlantic City. Hangman talked about how it's snowing in Chicago and his flight home is probably going to be canceled because there's a foot of snow on the ground, but he said he needed something. And he needed it tonight. So he called out Lance Archer to come on down to the ring. Let's do this here and now. Let's just fight. Dan Lambert comes out on the mic. And he's yakking away. Jake Roberts is with him. And Jake took the mic and told Hangman to shut up. And said, "You know what I smell? Because I smell fear." Out comes Lance Archer. He grabs the mic out of Lambert's hand and says, "Enough of this. I'm going to come shut you up, basically is what he said. So he storms down to the ring. Page, though, comes shooting out with a dive. And so these two are going at it outside the ring. Lambert shows up with a chair. And Page catches him, and he throws Lambert into the ring. And Lambert is on the ground, and he's begging off. And Hangman is on the apron. He's setting up for the buckshot lariat. And he gets nailed. He gets clobbered from behind by Archer with a chair. Archer had turned the ring steps over onto its side. This actually looked great. He grabbed Hangman and chokeslammed him. Got some real height on it, too. And he slammed him right on the edge. I mean, again, you picture the ring steps flipped over onto their side. He chokeslammed this fucker right onto those steps. It looked great. It sounded great. Great impact. So after that, Archer hoisted him up in position for the blackout. I thought he was going to give him the blackout on the steps. He turned around, walked over to where the timekeeper table is, and gave him the blackout through the table. And Jake is standing there leaning against the ring post just laughing. And Archer grabs a mic, and he was talking some shit and saying that next week he's going to leave as the AEW World Champion. So I thought this was fine. This was a fine way to build up the match for next week. Hangman is not going to lose, so you had to... Not make him look weak, but you had to show that he is vulnerable to this guy next week. And so you leave him laying, and then next week he comes back and he somehow manages to, you know, fight through and retain his championship. I don't know that there's really any drama, though, or any doubt about who's going to walk out next week with the title. And if you are a Lance Archer fan, yes, it's going to be another loss for Lance Archer, who never seems to be able to deliver on the big stage in the big matches. I guess we should just be happy that he's doing anything. Remember, we went through that whole period where they didn't have anything for him to do. He was just beating guys up every week and putting them in garbage cans. You know, at least he's got a big match on the show next week. He'll be in the main event. But he is not winning the championship. We go backstage. Chris Jericho is there. Oh, boy. Oh, here we go. Chris Jericho. And he delivered a backstage promo. He said that it was embarrassing that Santana and Ortiz would not tag him into the match last week. He said he wanted to hear from their mouths why they did what they did. Called for an Inner Circle team meeting next week. He said attendance is mandatory. Well, Professor Jericho says that attendance is mandatory next week. I wonder if he'll do roll call at the beginning of the segment and say, Santana, and he'll have to raise his hand like a fucking child, and he'll do the same thing with Ortiz, and he'll do the same thing with Hager. Sammy, you know, the thing about it is, this is so sad for Sammy Guevara, because they're going to do this segment next week. Sammy feels he's the champion, right? He's the only champion in the whole group. This feels beneath him. Like, I almost think, like, him being out there for this segment next week is going to, like, lower his stock. It's like, why is he even out there, right? He hasn't done anything with the Inner Circle recently. He's doing his own thing. He just had the match of his life last week against Cody. I'll never forget that fucking cutter off the top and everything. That was fucking awesome. This just feels beneath him. But Chris Jericho says that attendance is mandatory. So I guess all of us are going to have to be there next week. I guess all of us are going to have to be there. Professor Jericho, this guy's got tenure. So with 45 minutes left in the show, MJF was out for his entrance for the main event against CM Punk for the very first time, finally one-on-one after all the weeks of teasing it on television. Here we are, the first match, one-on-one. Punk caught MJF in the ropes early and was punching him repeatedly, and MJF did the teeter-tatter, or teeter-totter, I guess it is. He was teetering back and forth, and finally he tried to flee. Punk chased him into the crowd, caught up with him. He grabbed a drink from a fan, he slammed it over MJF's head, picked him up, crotched him on the handrail. Bryce Remsburg was the referee, and Bryce Remsburg was ordering them to get back into the ring, and so Punk obliged, and back into the ring they went. Punk body slammed him three times, and the fans chanted one more time, and hey, you know, CM Punk is nothing if not a man of the people in Chicago, so he gave him another slam, and then he went and laid over the top row. He was loving this. I mean, he was soaking in all the cheers from this crowd. Punk charged in. MJF moved, and Punk, he posted himself shoulder first in the corner. MJF followed him to the floor. He stood on his left hand. He dropped a knee on it, rolled Punk back inside as they headed into the commercial. So Punk started a comeback. He was throwing strikes, swinging neck breaker. He followed that up with his corner knee into the running bulldog. He was calling for the GTS, but MJF rolled out onto the apron. Punk slammed him on the apron. MJF stopped Punk in his tracks by pulling the referee in his way. Always a good heel move to pull the referee in front of you. Or if you're a heel, you have a female manager, you kind of pull her in the way, right? Savage used to do that with Elizabeth all the time. What a prick. So he pulls the referee in the way. And with the referee's back turned as Bryce is walking out of the corner, MJF pulled off his wrist tape, and he wrapped it around Punk's throat, and he covered up with a sleeper, so Bryce couldn't see the tape under the arm, but the whole time, he's choking out Punk with this wrist tape, and he's choking him, and he's choking him, and he gets Punk down, he locks on the body scissors, and Punk is fading, even though his eyes are wide open, he's fading and fading, and he referee picks up the arm once, the arm falls, he does it again, the arm falls, he does it again, and the arm falls. I wasn't expecting that. The crowd wasn't expecting that. And the referee calls for the bell. MJF has beaten CM Punk. He has choked CM Punk out into submission. They did the ref stoppage. I thought to myself, well, this can't end this way. We've got too much time left in the show. this can't possibly end like this. So I knew, I figured it was like a dusty finish type of, you know, type of thing. As MJF was celebrating, the tape that he was concealing fell out from under his arm, from under his armpit. It fell on the mat. And Bryce did this great, like, slow look down on the mat. The camera zoomed in on the tape. When the fans saw this, I guess they put it up on the screen, the crowd came alive. So, I mean, they reacted exactly the way that you would hope they would, because they knew what this meant. They knew that this match was going to be restarted. And sure enough, Remsburg went to the ring announcer and called for the match to be restarted, even though if he choked the guy unconscious, it should have been a disqualification win for Punk, if we're being honest. But again, Tony Khan is allergic to doing disqualification finishes. And look, I appreciate it. I do. Because I think we've been so abused with DQ finishes, you know, on the other channel for so long. It's nice to not have constant DQ cheap bullshit finishes on TV. But there are certain situations where, you know, it's a little ridiculous not to call for the DQ. But Bryce Remsburg, I guess he's a fan and he doesn't want the show to end like that. So instead, he restarts the match. Punk immediately rolls MJF up for a great near fall. And he went on the offense. He hit 20 punches in the corner. The crowd counted along from 1 to 20. MJF sent Punk crashing to the floor, though. Immediately after that, they went to another commercial. Come back from break. MJF was setting up for his heat seeker, the pendulum pile driver, but Punk shoved him off and connected with a springboard clothesline. Punk hit a tope through the ropes that sent MJF backwards into the barricade. But in so doing, when he landed hard on his knee on the floor. And he starts selling the left knee. And that becomes part of the story of the match now. So now his left arm is damaged from earlier, I think when he posted himself, his arm and shoulder. Now his left knee is damaged. This is part of the reason why I like the match. They told a similar story with Hangman and Danielson. And again, I think that there were just people who thought that it made the match too slow and boring, you know, working over a body part, but they're telling a story. You know, that's usually something you see in a pay-per-view match. These matches that we've gotten on TV over the past 2 months, these are pay-per-view quality matches that were being given on television. But if it were on a, you know, in a pay-per-view match, you're going to go 20, 25, 30 minutes plus. And you're going to have somebody working over a body part. You're going to have somebody selling the knee or selling an arm injury and they, you know, try to fight back from it. I didn't have any issue with it. They were telling a story here in this match. You know, is Punk going to be able to continue here? He's like a one-armed, one-legged man. Except when he wasn't. And he forgot to sell and he was running around like he always does. That's not a Punk problem, though. That's just a wrestling problem. So MJF locks on a cloverleaf, again, focusing on the knee. Locks on a cloverleaf, Punk powers out of it, applies an STF, but he couldn't use his left arm. And so he had to let go of the hold. He tried lifting MJF up for the go to sleep, but his left knee buckled underneath him. MJF locked on an ankle lock. Punk rolled through, sent MJF face first into the middle turnbuckle, knocked him loopy. They got to their feet. They exchanged strikes. They ended with CM Punk hitting a Poison Rana. When was the last time that CM Punk in a match hit a fucking Poison Rana? Because I can't remember. He may never hit one again. He landed right on his fucking head. It didn't look pretty on the landing there, but he hit a Poison Rana here on MJF. But he couldn't cover him right away. When he did, MJF kicked out. MJF came back. He's like, well, I'll take your Poison Rana. You're going to take my Made in Japan. Hit the pump handle slam, the Made in Japan to CM Punk, folded him up for a near fall. That is that the fall from grace? I know there's, Jordan Grace also uses that move, but is that the fall from grace or is that her other move? I know she has like a Vader bomb. I think of Made in Japan. I see that move, I immediately think of Shingo. He's the first, I don't think of Jordan Grace or anybody else, I think of Shingo Takagi. So that was the first thing I blurted out. I said, fuck, he hit the Made in Japan. But he only got an ear fall out of it. Punk got a waist lock, and they fell forward into the corner as he was trying to fight out of it. Almost crushed the referee in the corner, but not quite. They stopped short, And with the referee not able to see, MJF lifted his leg. He gave Punk a low blow. Then he tried to pin Punk with his feet on the ropes, but Punk did kick out. Back from the final picture-in-picture, they went to one last break. They come back from the break. MJF was biting Punk's head, and he perched him up top, went up top to hit some kind of a move, and Punk started biting him. So he started chewing on his head. And then, as if it wasn't surprising enough, seeing CM Punk hit a poison Rana. And it was cool to see MJF bust out the Made in Japan. CM Punk uses a fucking Pepsi plunge. He hits the pedigree off the top rope. I'm guessing the last time that CM Punk executed a Pepsi plunge had to be probably Ring of Honor. When the hell did he ever even try doing that in WWE? Can you imagine the outroar, the uproar, outcry? I just created a word, the outroar, from fucking Triple H. If he's sitting in the back and he sees CM Punk, especially in those first few years that he was in the company when he was like a fucking nobody to Triple H, he's sitting in the back and this fucker is using his move off the top rope. Can you imagine the fucking burial that would have followed? So, no, he never used that move in WWE. So that's the first time in well over a decade that CM Punk has busted out the Pepsi plunge. I popped for that. I was not expecting that in this match. But again, he couldn't capitalize right away because when he landed on his knee. And he's selling a knee injury in this match. So it gave MJF enough time to roll out to the floor. Yeah, Darlene, I think you're right. Now that I think about it, I think Jim Ross said 17 years. I think it's been 17 years since CM Punk, according to Jim Ross, since he has used the Pepsi plunge. He's a lot older now. I'm sure it didn't feel too good on those knees. But that was very cool to see him bust that out. Now, back inside, MJF is attempting a tombstone piledriver. Punk reverses it by wiggling around, fall backwards. Now he has him up in position for the tombs. I love that tombstone reversal spot. I always love that. MJF wiggled free, though. Punk rocked him with a kick to the side of the head. He went up top, hit the flying elbow, covered him. MJF kicks out at 2.5. Punk signaled for the go to sleep. And at that point, MJF fell out of the ring to the floor. And here comes Wardlow. Wardlow had not come out with MJF. Sean Spears had not come out. He came out by himself. I hadn't even thought about Wardlow, in all honesty. But here comes Wardlow wearing this long winter coat. And he very slowly walks down to the ring. CM Punk has made eye contact with Wardlow. MJF is laying on the ground. He's like a dead body on the floor at Punk's feet. And Wardlow looks down at MJF like he's debating what he's going to do. He steps over his body, and he goes face-to-face with CM Punk. So we have this tense standoff here between these two men. And then he backs away, and he allows CM Punk to pick up MJF and deposit him back into the ring. Of course, Punk doesn't trust this man. So when he climbs into the ring, he looks back. He's staring at Wardlow. Wardlow is reaching up to grab the rope like he's going to tease coming inside. So Punk is now distracted. He's watching Wardlow. The referee is trying to tell Wardlow to get out of here. In the background, you see MJF fiddling around. He's got the Dynamite Diamond ring. And when Punk turns around, MJF wallops him right in the head with the ring and knocks him out. And he covers CM Punk. The referee didn't see it. He turns around. 1, 2, 3. MJF pins CM Punk. He beat this man twice in the same match. He put him to sleep and he pinned him. Now, he cheated both times, but who the fuck cares? It's only cheating if you get caught. He got caught the first time. He didn't get caught the second time. A win is a win. You know where I learned that from, by the way? Al Bundy. Al Bundy once taught me it's only cheating if you get caught. MJF did not get caught that second time. So a win is a win. The biggest win of MJF's career, the very first loss for CM Punk in an AEW ring. The beauty of that finish is what they showed on the replay. Because I don't think anybody, unless you were in the building, in the aisleway, sitting there, you could have seen it. They didn't shoot it, so we couldn't see. When Wardlow came down to the ring and he stepped over MJF's body, he slipped him the ring. He dropped the ring down and slipped him the ring. And then later on, again, very covertly, he slipped the ring back to Wardlow. So Wardlow had this look on his face the whole time, like, you know, like this conflicted look. What am I going to do? They had this thing mapped out from the word go. They were in on it together the entire time. But I thought that was fucking brilliant because I didn't see it. Again, because they weren't really shooting it. How could I have seen it? But I thought that was genius that on the replay they showed he passed it to him as he stepped over his body and went face to face with Punk on the outside. We didn't even know. I just assumed MJF had it, you know, in his tights, pulled it out. Wardlow slipped in the ring. I thought that was beautiful. So I thought this was an excellent 30-minute pay-per-view caliber match between these two. It's as I said last week, MJF had to win this match. This was a must-win match for MJF. He needed to beat Punk in Chicago to build to a rematch at Revolution next month. And that is exactly what they did tonight, and this has to be exactly what this is building to now. It's got to be building, clearly, to Punk against MJF Part 2, probably with some stipulation, I'm guessing, revolving around Wardlow. Now, you could bar Wardlow from ringside altogether. To me, though, I think you really want him out there, though, for the match. I think you want to build the drama around him. I mean, on the one hand, you don't want it to take away from the match. But the real story that people want, they want Wardlow to turn on MJF. They want him to snap and break away from this man. They want Wardlow to pound this guy into the ground. That's what people are dying to see. So to me, you want him out there. You want him out there in his corner to watch his back. And I think you're better off allowing him to be out there. Again, what the stipulation would be then if you're allowing him at ringside, it could maybe, you know, maybe it's no DQ. Maybe it's a match where they can use weapons and stuff. I think it's very much overplayed, that stip in AEW, but that could be where Wardlow tries to help him out again, but this time it backfires, you know, or maybe MJF goes to whack Punk with the Dynamite Diamond ring. The referee got bumped. Punk ducks out of the way and he accidentally knocks out Wardlow or hits Wardlow in the head with it. And Wardlow is fed up with this shit and he says, fuck this, I'm out of here. Or he finally just clobbers MJF and gets a massive pop. You know, but I would have to think in this next match, that is where they're going to shoot this angle. Either the split or the real beginning of a split between those two. But I think you want him out there. So I don't know that, you know, banning him from ringside, I feel like you're taking a lot of the drama away. But that's what it's building to, a Revolution next month. So I thought this was a great main event. I enjoyed it very much. I didn't find it boring or slow, but again, it's all about the kind of style, I guess. Now, could they have shaved time off the match? I'll tell you what I think hurt the match. I actually don't think the match was that much longer. If I would have shaved time off the match, I would have shaved maybe 5 or 6 minutes. I wouldn't have shaved more than that. I think what hurts matches like this is the fact that you have the commercial breaks. There isn't a whole lot that goes on. They have the picture-in-picture. It's not like they're just standing there, but I think that they slow the pace down during the commercials. They don't want to do anything too heavy. They want to wait until they come back, right? So if you're in the building watching live, things slow to a crawl. You get a long match like this. You got three commercial breaks. That's three different points in the match where things slow down. And you got to wait 3-4 minutes. Oh, we're back live? Okay, then the pace picks up again. I think it hurts the match in that way. And that's why people, especially if you're in the building, might look at it and go, man, if they would have shaved fucking 10 or 12 minutes off this match, it would have been a lot better. You know, I might have shaved a few minutes, but not much longer than that. I think it was just the right length. I think they told a good story. And I think they paid it off exactly the way that they had to get to the second match. So I didn't have an issue with it. I enjoyed it a lot. Now, this Friday on Rampage in Chicago is Ricky Starks defending his FTW title against Jay Lethal. We've got Sammy Guevara defending his TNT title against Isaiah Cassidy of Private Party. Adam Cole, one-on-one with Evil Uno. What a match that'll be. And Thunder Rosa. Here's a match I'm looking forward to. Thunder Rosa one-on-one against Mercedes Martinez. The talk is over. Finally, one-on-one, these two women. They haven't done anything on the main shows to build this matchup. Maybe on Dark there's been stuff going on. I wouldn't know. You got to do something on Dynamite. You got to do something on Rampage. Other than a run-in in one match where Mercedes was coming out, I think, to interfere, and Rosa stopped her. They've done nothing. They've done nothing with these women to really build this match up. But the match itself, I expect to be very good. Now, next Wednesday on Dynamite, it's the Texas Death Match, AEW title on the line. Lance Archer challenges Hangman Adam Page. And Chris Jericho has called a mandatory meeting of the Inner Circle. Hopefully it is the beginning of the end of the Inner Circle. And Santana and Ortiz, they could be like all these WWE people who have their non-competes expiring. Santana and Ortiz can be like Andy Dufresne in the Shawshank Redemption. As the rain falls from the sky, they look up to the heavens, free! Finally, I'm free. And they can move on with their careers, because this Inner Circle stuff has done nothing but hold them back. Now let's take a look at the poll. We have a few other things to get to here, and then your super chats. I'm going to read all your messages, so if you have comments, I want to hear from you guys. We have the thumbs up, 78.2%. Thumbs in the middle, 13.7%. And thumbs down is way down there at 8%. So those are the totals. If you want to vote in the poll or any of these polls every week, the place to go is at Solomonster. And then we put the polls up on the screen at the end of the stream. Before we get into anything else, before we get into, and I'm going to pick a winner, by the way, in the Rumble pool, and then we're going to go into the Super Chats. But I would be remiss if I did not put this on screen. Now, I want to show you this. And I want to give credit to the SmackDown Hotel. This is their tweet. This is not my tweet, but they put this tweet up earlier. I don't know how many of you have been following along the WWE 2K22 stuff. I think we got some actual gameplay footage. And I'm watching some of this stuff, and it really doesn't look all that bad. But then I see this, and this is a photo. It says here, a first look at Beth Phoenix and Shawn Michaels from the Performance Center in the WWE 2K22 My Rise mode, which is basically, I think, career mode. Hey, Aunt Peggy McDonald. Aunt Peggy just became a Sound Off superstar. Aunt Peggy, how are you doing, Aunt Peggy? Boy, you know, I haven't kept up with Aunt Peggy in a while. I heard that she had a drinking problem. I hope she's doing well. And look at this. Aunt Peggy is now a member of the channel here. I usually see her on Thanksgiving, and, you know, she's hitting the Hennessy pretty hard. So I hope she's doing well. Thank you for becoming a channel member. But back to this amazing photo here. This is an image. Now, I believe in the lower left, I believe. That is supposed to be Sarah Amato, Sarah Del Rey, I believe. On the right, I think that's Bailey. I don't know if it's Bailey or just a created superstar. It doesn't matter. All you need to look at are the two in the middle. And on the left, we'll start on the right. It's unbelievable. Let me put this image up first of all. Here's a better image, okay? I want you to look at this. Look at this. Look at this. This is Shawn Michaels. Look at that head of hair on Shawn. How much money did he slip to the developers of this game to put that in 2K22? Look at that head of hair on Shawn. Shawn Michaels has not had a head of hair like that in I don't even know how many years. His thumb on his left thumb is a little deformed. Actually, both thumbs look a little deformed, but that's okay. But look at that. First of all, he looks depressed. I don't know what's going on here in this particular scene. This is from a cutscene, by the way. I should mention that. Clearly, it's from a cutscene in the game. Look at that hairdo. But that's not even the worst of it. Take a look at Beth Phoenix. Holy shit! What is that? I haven't seen scary shit like this since Halloween. This woman looks like she's looking into the windows of my soul. I don't know what she's looking at, but I'll tell you what. Nobody told me that 2K22 is being released for the PS2. Look at these fucking graphics. Holy shit. Look at these graphics. What is with these graphics? I don't know, man. I looked at some of the gameplay stuff, and it didn't look that bad, but then these cutscenes, and I look at this, and I just say, look at this, and look at this. And I swear to God, it looks like I'm back to the early days of SmackDown versus Raw. Now, I'm totally buying this game. Let me just say that. I am buying this game. I have not bought a WWE game in many years. I do want to get back to Sound Off Gamer. I think for the laughs, if nothing else, this woman is, I got to take this off the screen. This woman is fucking terrifying me there. But I have a feeling this game is going to be good for a lot of laughs when we finally bring back Sound Off Gamer. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. That is going to be something else. But that tell me that is not the stuff of nightmares. Tell me that is not the stuff of nightmares, please. My God. I don't know what she's looking at, but she doesn't say. Maybe weren't there stories last year or 2 years ago about some nut job who was trying to like break into the performance center? He was like infatuated with the women down there or something, and the cops were called and they tased him or they shot him or something. It's a real raving lunatic. Maybe she sees him in the window. He's like pounding on the window. Maybe they'll put him as like a fucking unlockable character in the game. Maybe. But I can't wait, man. I can't wait for 2K22 to come out for the PS2. I'm very much looking forward to that. I'm very much looking forward to that. She just saw Lita. I don't know what she saw. But clearly she was obviously very terrified by this. Maybe she saw Edge with walking down the hallway with Lita. They were walking arm in arm, and she was very concerned. Possible. That would be a hell of a storyline in the game, I'll tell you that much. If that's what happened. But I'll tell you what, before we get to the super chats, let me do this real quick. I did mention that we had 1,600 plus entries in our Royal Rumble Facebook pool this year, which was very cool. 49 pools. That is 98 people. So there's 98 names on this list. If I scroll down, you'll have to take my word for it. I'll scroll up. We have 98 names on this list. And the way this is going to work, we're going to do this very easily, and we're going to do this very quickly. I am going to... Let me first thank Zach and Julian again. I'll say it again. They are doing God's work with this stuff every year. Zach putting everything together, Julian helping out him with the prizes and everything. So the first place winner is going to win $75 donated by Julian. Second place winner gets any two Solid Monster shirts from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. Third place winner gets any one Solid Monster shirt. Plus, you get all the bragging rights for being the winners. I'm going to randomize this list. The names that come up at number one, number two, and number three, those are your first, second, and third place winners in that order. It's the easiest way to go about doing this. So why don't we get a drum roll going, please, as we figure out who the prize winners are in the Solid Monster Ultimate Rumble Pool. Let us find out. Brian Pulley is the number one first place winner. You've won 75 smackaroos. Number two is James Stevenson, second place winner. And number three is Phil Stosiek. You are the third place winner. Congratulations to Brian James and Phil. Brian James. Interesting. Road Dogg was not in this pool, but Brian James and Phil, congratulations on winning. I think they will be in touch with you, but if not, you can touch base with Zach and or Julian. They will get you all set up with what you need. And again, I thank you for your service. I thank you for partaking in our wonderful Ultimate Rumble pool. It all boiled down to you three. You get bragging rights until next year. Next year is the 10-year anniversary. We're going to be doing 10 years of this. We're going to have to ratchet up the prizes next year and figure out something really special. But anyway, I thank you guys for that. So let's get to your super chats. I know you guys have comments and questions probably about a whole bunch of stuff. There's a whole lot of stuff going on in wrestling this week, in case you couldn't tell. But in particular, this AEW show tonight. So let's go back here Let's go back and begin with Nayef. How about that? We'll start with Nayef. Nayef Alsafar. My boy, Nayef. Thank you for dropping the $4.99. I appreciate it. I appreciate you every week being part of our stream here. Nick Grosso, $4.99. Brandy got the shut the fuck up treatment and turned Lambert face. My God, she is terrible. If the plan is Paige Van Zandt against Brandy, then Paige has to win. Oh, you think? You think she has to win? I don't know, man. Food Hive, 5 stars for 2 straight weeks. Oh, Food Hive is having himself a good Wednesday night. Deuce, dropping $4.99. He's dropping deuces here on the stream. Have to think that they're going to run MJF and Punk back at Revolution after that match, maybe in a cage. Yeah, a cage is possible. I hadn't thought about the cage. Cage is possible, but you want Wardlow out there. Whether it's a cage match or something else, I think you definitely want to have Wardlow out there. Yeah, Jay William, again, I haven't... the last WWE game that I paid for, that I played, because I'm not really gaming much anymore, but when I start getting back into it, I'm sure I'll be terrible, but 2K16 was the last game that I played. And the gameplays that are on the channel pretty much tell you the kind of player I was. But it was fun, you know, and I feel like because it's been 5 or 6 years, enough time has gone by now where no matter how terrible the game might end up being, it'll be good for the laughs. It'll be good for the content, if nothing else. So I kind of hope the game is that bad because I think it'll be interesting to get, if we get any fun glitches in the game. You see that Ultimate Warrior super chat pop up every now and then where his face is all fucking mangled and shit. I think it would be fun. Marcus Thomas with the $2. CM Punk against MJF was better than Lesnar against Lashley. Well, that's not saying much. Lesnar against Lashley was disappointing. It was the better match. Lamar Smith, $9.99. What's the point in restarting the match for MJF cheating? He's just going to cheat to win again. Shouldn't they have come out and restarted it again? It's like it's okay to cheat the second time. Well, no, I mean, the story is that the referee caught him the first time because he fucked up and he dropped the tape. The second time, the referee didn't catch him. And the second time is where Wardlow plays into the story. So I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. It's not like a referee came out the first time to tell Bryce Remsburg what happened. And then they did the same finish and there was no referee who came out. That wouldn't make any sense. Then I would say you have a point. That's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. But that's not what they did. Flamethrower Fluff Salisbury. Any idea where they are heading with Ruby and Nyla? The finish doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I didn't like the finish, but I have to think it's leading to a third match of Revolution. They had one match previously that Ruby won. Now Nyla won the second one. You gotta have the rubber match. Giovanni Zarate. Giovanni Zarate dropped $125 before I even came on live tonight. I was at the show tonight, and it was a ton of fun. The crowd dies at about the 25 to 30 minute mark of the main event. It was a great match, but they would have benefited from shaving off 10 to 15 minutes. Giovanni, thank you, sir. I'm glad you made it to the venue. I had 2 people email me and tell me they weren't even going to go. They were going to try to get a refund or they were going to have to eat the cost of their ticket because I guess things, maybe where they are, I guess the roads or whatever were bad enough. Or either that or they were worried about not being able to get home. But I guess the weather is not great in Chicago. But I'm glad you had fun. And again, brother, thank you, man, for the $125. Woo! Holy shit. Joseph Long with the $6. Thank you, sir. No message, just showing some love. Griga, keep up the good work, Solo Monster. Thank you, sir. French Fry Slut with the $5 super chat. Solo Monster's grrr face gives me fight or flight reactions. Fight or flight reactions from the grrr face? Well, I didn't do the grrr face tonight, so it's all good. I guess I just did it just now. Joseph, buy or sell on the bigger what if in pro wrestling, Gino Hernandez or Brian Pillman? Ooh. Brian Pillman. I'm going to say Brian Pillman. BJ Blazkowicz. Can't wait to see the review watching at Rampage right now. I thought the main event was great, but I think the crowd was being too self-indulgent to get into it. Rodimus Prime, $15 super chat. Buy or sell. The worst world champion in recent memory, Matt Taven as the Ring of Honor champion in 2019, or David Arquette as the WCW champion in 2000. I mean, look, I'm not, by no means was I the biggest fan of putting that title on Matt Taven. I would have put it on Marty Scurll, but, you know, looking back on it, hindsight being what it is, I'm glad that that didn't happen. But come on. We got to give Matt Taven a little more credit than that. Ryan Spies, AEW should bring back Doc Gallows and book Shane McMahon against Doc Gallows. No, they shouldn't. Rizzo, some conspiracies are worth looking into. For example, the Kennedy assassination, but what Kendrick was saying was too much even for me. Yeah, look, that was the point that I was making earlier. There are conspiracy. Look, Jesse Ventura had a whole show at one time built around conspiracy theories. I think it was literally called Conspiracy Theories with Jesse Ventura. There are conspiracy theories. People talk about UFOs, or they talk about Kennedy assassination is probably the most dissected event. I mean, maybe 9/11 is now, but the Kennedy assassination is one of those incidents or situations where I agree that there are questions and there are a lot of people who have different theories about it. But as you said, some of the stuff that Kendrick was getting into, by his own admission, he creates controversies and conspiracies out of everything, to the point where even his wife was just tuning him out. And you can laugh and go, ha ha, at some of the goofy stuff he talks about, but then you read up and see him on video talking about stuff like Sandy Hook or the Nazis or the Holocaust. There's just some shit that there is no debate about. There are some lines that you do not cross. And it was ridiculous, it was stupid, it was disgusting, it made him look like a fucking moron that he would even fall for shit like that. And so him posting what he posted on Twitter, as I said before, had to happen, at a minimum. I wouldn't want this to fester and have people thinking that I actually believe in that shit. It's fucking embarrassing. So I agree. Samoan fan... when WWE says, let it play out, they fire someone or disappoint us. When AEW says the same, we got a great ladder match and Punk MJF in 2 weeks. French Fry Slut, by the way, first date update, turns out he's a piece of shit. Oh well. Well, unfortunately, you're going to find that there's a lot of them in the world. I'm sorry that it didn't work out, but as they say, there are many fish in the sea. But you're a French fry girl. You're not a fish stick girl, so you probably don't want to hear that right now. But I think you'll land on your feet and you'll be okay. You just have to find the right person. We might have to play matchmaker here on the stream. We might have to get everybody together to play matchmaker for French Fry Slut. You'll have to fill us in on what's your type. What kind of person are you looking to date? And then maybe we can help. Right? Everybody in the chat wants to help. This could end very badly, but we're always willing to help. Samoan fan, is Charlotte in a Triple H Reign of Terror type run? No, not yet. She's not. Samoan fan, who the heck is Bill Shannon on Twitter? Nobody worth talking about. Z999, hey Solomonster, does that mean people are going to crucify Ronda Rousey for posting Sandy Hook conspiracy videos on Twitter back in 2013? Shouldn't she be pulled from WWE? Just wondering. If she is that something that she was into, because I'm not aware of Ronda Rousey's social media activities, but I'm sure that somebody will bring it up, and if it becomes an issue, then she's going to have to deal with it. Yeah, like I said, there's certain lines that you don't cross when you're talking about fucking 20 kids who were massacred. Yeah, I don't know what she said, but I'm kind of afraid to look now. Michael Jensen, boy, it's a lot of dumb people in this world. Holy shit! Let me tell you. There are a lot of stupid fucking people out there. Michael Jensen, fantastic main event tonight. Daniel Garcia being mentored by Bryan Danielson. Yes, please. Let's see, James Cooper. I support AEW for pulling Kendrick, but now AEW absolutely cannot sign the Briscoes. That would be a major double standard. Homophobia is inexcusable. I can't disagree with you. Spaghetti. Bianca Belair against Rey Fénix. Mask versus hair. Who goes over? Bianca Belair against Rey Fénix? Mask against hair? That sounds like something that I would come up with on Be the Booker. If we had like an intergender Be the Booker. I mean, I'd go with Bianca. Tuxedo T Servo, good show. The Danielson promo was great and has me kind of hoping they do eventually put Mox and Danielson together. Matthew Sun, $7 super chat. I only just clocked that MJF was wearing Yankees pinstripes a la Punk at Night of Champions 2012 against John Cena. Masterful touch. Match reminded me of a golden era Bret Hart match. It was great. You know, I didn't even notice that the Yankee pinstripes. I have to go back and watch that. Yeah, I didn't even pick up on that. I pick up on certain things, but when it comes to gear from pay-per-views that were 10 years ago, yeah, I don't remember that. Joseph Brooks, why was Scott Hall never world champion? Could he have been? I think he could have been, but I think that his issues got in the way of it. I think his issues got in the way of him having more success in his career. Quintus Brown, put that Beth image as a super chat. You know what? I probably will. I'll make it a random super chat. Darth Panic, who does Tony Khan sign first out of the former WWE talent that just finished the 90 days? I mentioned some names earlier. I think Keith Lee and Ember Moon are the two that really stand out to me. I don't know what Karrion Kross is planning to do, or he and Scarlett are going to go somewhere in a package deal. I would hope so. But those are the names that I would go after first. And Edwin Nunez just finished the show. The main event was amazing. Thank you, Edwin. Glad that you enjoyed the show tonight. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, it's funny. Somebody mentioned the Briscoes, and I have been puzzled by the lack of mention about the Briscoes on TV, even as FTR does this angle on social media where they're teasing an eventual match. And I said on the podcast this weekend that I don't think we're getting the Briscoes anyway. It just looks increasingly likely that they're saving that match between them, and there will be a match. But it seems to me like they're saving that match for the Supercard of Honor. You know, it's going to be Ring of Honor's first show back WrestleMania weekend. And it looks like, you know, they shot the angle at Final Battle. They might be waiting until the Ring of Honor show to do the match. I mean, there's been no mention of any of it on AEW television at any point. So, you know, people talking about the Briscoes and whether or not they may or may not, you know, come into AEW may not have to worry about it because it doesn't look like it's in the cards anyway. The possessed Beth GIF is going to haunt me for a very long time now. It's going to haunt a lot of people. There it is. We're going to have nightmares about this tonight. I can only hope. I know it's a cutscene, so the cutscenes don't always look that great, but I can only hope that, for God's sakes, you know, that this is a work in progress and that this isn't the finished product. But I mean, the game is coming out in less than 2 months, right? The game is coming out in like 5 or 6 weeks. The game is done. So I mean, I just can't get over that hair. Shawn Michaels hasn't had hair that good in about 15 years, even when his hair was still long. He wishes he had hair like that. I'm telling you, look at this. Unreal. Oh my. This is going to be some game. This is going to be a hell of a Sound Off Gamer return once I bring it back. Joseph Brooks, as great as Corporate Rock was, do you think the Attitude Era still would have been great if The Rock had stayed babyface along with Stone Cold Steve Austin? I mean, the Attitude Era would have been fun. I mean, I was at that age where it was right up my alley. So you had a lot of different characters on the show, and if Austin was on top, yes, it still would have been fun. It would have been less fun. Because part of the appeal of that era was The Rock, once he just turned heel and he went, you know, against the fans and he went corporate, and he's wearing the silk shirts and doing all the stuff that he was doing on TV. You know, Austin against Rock, man. I mean, you take that away, yeah, you're taking away a lot of the fun. But I mean, it still would have been fun. The Beth face is what I look like after watching Raw on most weeks. No, actually, that's not true. If that were true, her eyes would be closed, and I would be counting sheep above my head. Paul Heyman. Can't wait for the Sunday podcast where you talk about what's next for that hot, young, up-and-coming star, Shane McMahon. Well, we're gonna have a lot to say about Shane O'Mac on the podcast, but I will say this much. The news that came out today was a huge positive as far as WrestleMania is concerned. Some of the things that I was hearing as far as plans for Shane, if even some of it was true, thank God he won't be there. What happened today was a plus for WWE. Justin from Detroit dropping $10. Please take my money for doing such a good job. Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Justin. I appreciate that. I'm glad you enjoyed the streams. We had a lot of them last week, actually. Heading into the Royal Rumble, a lot of streams, and we had some new content go up for channel members, including our call-in show, episode 2. We're going to be doing more of those call-in shows for channel members, watch-alongs, a lot of fun stuff if you're not a channel member. Like, we had a new member join earlier, my aunt. I forgot my aunt's name already, but my aunt, what was it? Aunt Ginny or whatever it was, became a channel member. You were looking forward to the famous Shane punches. And well, now he can go work on his punches while he has some time off. Samoan fan, Shane McMahon will beat Okada for the IWGP title. Hey, maybe we could convince Shane to come on into House of Glory. We can have Shane McMahon make his House of Glory debut. You know, and I know we have people in the chat who are in New York who are probably going to be at the House of Glory show. The next show is coming up, not this weekend, but the following Saturday. And we're loading up the card pretty good. Private Party, you saw them on TV tonight. They're coming back for one night only, at least. House of Glory coming back to wrestle Rich Swann and Willie Mack. We've got Alex Shelley debuting, challenging Low Key for the Crown Jewel Championship. And just announced during Dynamite tonight, just announced, Switchblade Jay White is making his Hog debut February 12, one-on-one. He's going to be in action that night against House of Glory's own Cashflow Ken Broadway. So get to call my first Switchblade match. Very excited about that. It'll be on Fight TV live. Aunt Peggy, thank you. Thank you, James. It was Aunt Peggy. How could I forget Aunt Peggy? I haven't seen Aunt Peggy in many years, but I'm glad that she's part of the channel now. Shane to AEW. All right, if we could be serious for a moment here. I've seen all the memes today. Shane McMahon, what's he doing in the Impact Zone? Shane McMahon, he's all elite. Brett Lauderdale from GCW was asking, hey, does Shane have a 30-day or a 90-day non-compete? And it's funny, but Shane McMahon is not going anywhere. There are people who think he will end up in AEW. Shane McMahon is not going anywhere because Shane McMahon will be back in a few months. I guarantee you, Shane McMahon, at some point this year, will be back. This is only temporary. He is not gone for good. He is not going somewhere else. Why would he even bother? Why would he even bother? He would start up his own thing before he would go work for somebody else. That was the luxury of working in WWE. It's family owned. It's his father. It's in the family. He's not going to go work for Tony Khan or somebody else. Why would he do that? He's got enough money. He doesn't have to go work for Tony Khan. He'll be back. Hey, one wrestling fan just became a Sound Off superstar. Welcome, one wrestling fan, to the family. What would his name be outside of WWE? It would be Shane McMahon. Can you imagine if they applied for some kind of trademark and they blocked him from using his own name? I could tell you one thing, whatever name he would use, it wouldn't be as horrible as some of the names they've given to people in their company. He would come up with something halfway decent, I'm sure. Moore's Sanctorum with the $2. Someone said Shane is not even invited to WrestleMania. Well, that's just cold. You know what's really cold about it, though? Vince McMahon's mother just passed away a week before the Royal Rumble. That's Shane's grandmother. And then Vince turned around and sent him home. That's cold. That's cold. So when we talk about all these releases and how nobody is safe, Bray Wyatt, Braun Strowman, Samoa Joe, William Regal, none of these people are safe. Forget those names. When Shane McMahon is sent home, you know nobody is safe. When he sends his own son home, nobody is safe. Robert Kaplinger with the $4.99. You should listen to Sofa Bob on Spotify or Apple Music. I feel it's up your alley. Keep up the good work. Always love your streams. Sofa Bob. I've never heard of Sofa Bob. I will have to look into this. Is it music or is it like a podcast? I don't know. Is it a guy named Bob doing a podcast from home on his sofa? That's kind of what it sounds like. Vince doesn't care about anything but money. Why do we forget how ruthless he is? I haven't forgotten. I'm well aware of how ruthless he's been throughout his entire career. In all honesty, that's why he's still standing. And all those other promoters, they failed because he was more ruthless than they were. Doesn't make him a good person, but it does make him more successful than them. That's why he's still around and they've all fallen off. Shane, go to your room. I'm sure that this didn't happen, but can you imagine him looking down at his phone and answer? He sees that it's from Stanford and he picks up the phone and it's fucking Johnny Ace in that voice. Hey, Shane, I hate to do this. He's been Johnny Aced. I'm sure that didn't happen. Did Linda step down? Linda stepped down when she ran for the Senate. Yeah, so she's completely, officially, she's completely divorced from any involvement in the company. I'm sure they talk at night in bed. But yeah, she hasn't had anything to really officially do with the company in over a decade now.
Budget cuts. Budget cuts, kid, I'm sorry. It's just budget cuts. It's nothing personal.
Who has looked better in their return, Edge or Christian? I've seen more of Edge than I've seen of Christian. I would say Edge, but I mean, the times that I've seen Christian, the matches with Omega, he looked great. I just haven't seen as much of him in the ring. Edge looked fantastic in the feud with Rollins, all the matches they had. I mean, Edge, look, facially, he looks a lot older. Edge looks like he's aged, because he has. The guy's almost 50 years old. He looks like a fucking mountain man now. But, you know, he's had some great matches, there's no doubt. You know, forget the Miz stuff. The matches with Roman and the matches with Rollins have been great. And my hope is that we will end up getting Edge against AJ Styles this year at WrestleMania. Those family dinners must suck. Yeah, I was thinking about that too. That's got to be a really awkward family dinner the next time they're all together. The next time he takes the kids over to see Grandpa, it's just got to be fucking strange. You know, that's why he quit the first time. When he walked out in 2009, he couldn't take it anymore. All you heard all the time were these stories about Vince yelling at him and people liked Shane. You know, they kind of gave him his own division. He was running like the digital media division or something and everybody liked him and said he was doing a good job and the division was doing well and he just couldn't take Vince. He couldn't take working for him and being yelled at and talked down to, and so he just quit. You know? You would hope that at home they could kind of turn turn that off and flip the switch and keep work at work. But I don't know. To me, that just seems fucking awkward. Jason Case with the $5. Was it true that Vince stopped blade jobs in WWE because of Shawn Michaels against Jericho in 2008, or was it a multitude of things? That had a lot to do with it. I was there. That was at the Nassau Coliseum. That was at the last Great American Bash pay-per-view they did in 2008, when they still called it the Great American Bash, not just the Bash. And Michaels bled a gusher in that match, and I remember that Vince was not happy about it. It was so much blood. And so, yeah, I think it was more than just the one match, but that was sort of the tipping point, where I think he just didn't want blade jobs. He didn't want a lot of blood on the shows anymore. But it was also 2008. You know, it was right around that time they went PG, right? Or maybe a year later. Was it 07 or 08? It was sometime around then. So they were going PG. The blood was going to go away anyway. Hunter and Shane start their own promotion. James Cooper, Solo is the GOAT. Thank you all for the amazing content. Or thank you for all the amazing content. I thought he was thanking everybody in the chat. Everybody should take a bow. Thank you, James. Didn't Batista get a massive fine for bleeding? He did. He did. But was that in 07 or was that in 08? It would have been around the same time. It was him and Jericho, I think. Or Jericho offered, I think Jericho offered to pay for it or something, pay for his fine. Yeah, Vince sat them down. He actually, like, I can only imagine what this scene must have looked like. It was backstage, I think, at Raw. And he puts them in a room and he sits them down. And he has probably one of these old, like, little CRT TVs with a fucking VCR. And it pops the tape in from the match they had on TV, I think, the week before. And he's like, see, I can see where you bladed or whatever. It's like the fucking Zapruder footage from the fucking Kennedy assassination we were just talking about. This guy's out of his mind. He goes through these little fits and things. It's like, all right, if you feel that way, that's fine. But like, 1 year, this is how it is. And then things change. 1 week, you can't say the word belt, but then you can. Or you can't say this, but then he forgets. It's a fucking maniac. Like, who could work for somebody like this? The guy's out of his mind. I could never work for someone like that. Life is too short. Life is too fucking short to work for somebody like that. Never. It would drive me nuts. There's no job in the world that I would love that much to work for a psychopath like that. Eric says there was a second blader by the grassy knoll. Yeah, I think there was. I think there must have been. Either that or he was in the depository. He was looking down. He was chucking blades, hoping to hit somebody in the head and open them up. Shane is starting the Sweatshop podcast. I'm telling you, every time this guy would show up for a promo, he looked winded. You know, and I know he does, I don't know if he does Brazilian jiu-jitsu or he rolls or what he does. Like, you know, he's active and he's not that old. His early 50s, but like he just looked unhealthy. Like when he was on television the last time on a regular basis, and we would see him in the ring, even just for a promo, he didn't look healthy. The breathing, we made fun of all this on the podcast at the time. I had that cat meme where it shows the picture of the cat with the stuffed in face, and it goes breathing intensifies, and I put the fucking cat head on Shane's body. It was ridiculous. I don't know. It's weird. I don't know if it's just nerves get to him and he's just breathing heavily or what it was, but he sounded very unwell. Shane McMahon's Out of Breath podcast on Spotify. Hey, Funky Pluck, you rule too, brother. Yeah, John says, what I never got my head around was not allowed to blade, but Brock can smash your head in for real. Yeah. Explain that one. I'd love to hear WWE explain that one. That's why when they put that statement out about the fucking women's match on New Year's Eve in AEW and how barbaric and, you know, what was the phrase? It was a Vince phrase. Self-mutilation, right, going after them. It's the first thing everybody was pointing it out. SummerSlam 2016, I think it was. Brock Lesnar against Randy Orton in the main event, the way he opened him up with those fucking elbows. You're not going to tell me he shot on him and people weren't expecting it. That was the whole fucking plan. I remember reading he and Heyman, and they all went into a room. They knew what they were doing that night. I don't want to hear, well, Brock does what Brock wants to do. You can't allow something like that on your show. I mean, look, 2016, I know it was 5 or 6 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. You can't allow something like that to happen on your television show and then go complain that some other promotion is being barbaric because they're allowing women to bleed on TV. Fucking hypocrites. Far worse and far more dangerous to let somebody, let alone Brock Lesnar, pound away at your fucking skull until he draws blood and opens you up and probably concusses you in the process. Oh, that's okay. Samoan fan, $5 super chat. Remember that time when Vince McMahon said he wanted The Undertaker's wife to be sexually assaulted by a motorcycle gang? No, he used the word rape. He wanted her to be raped by a motorcycle gang. The look on Paul Heyman's face during that segment said it all. What must have been going through his head? Yeah, go find that segment. I don't remember what year that was, but go find that segment. Maybe it was 03. Because they had that match at Survivor Series where Vince bled in the first 2 minutes. It might have been around that time. Yeah, I mean, there's some weird... If you go back in the vault, I don't know if this stuff is still on the network or if they've scrubbed it, you know, like the Trish Stratus segment, get down on your knees and bark like a dog. I don't know if that's on the network or not, but holy shit, like, when people will tweet out these older clips sometimes that I have completely forgotten about, I don't even remember some of this stuff even happening. The Kurt Angle stuff with Booker T's wife and the promo, I want to have sex with your wife, like hot bestiality sex or something. I'm like, what the fuck is this? What is this? How do I not remember this? I must have blocked it out of my mind. Some of these storylines are just way out there. Did they scrub what he said to Booker T? I believe they did, yes. People like you don't get to be world champion. Isn't that what Triple H said to Booker T? And then guess what? WrestleMania came and he proved him right. Jason Case, Vince is definitely a one-of-a-kind human being. That he is. That he is. The Mickey and Trish WrestleMania match where Mickey licked her fingers after, yeah. That was a moment, and I remember Vince was hot. He didn't like that. I think she got in trouble for that when she got to the back. That, I do believe, is edited out. I don't think that's on the replay. Fire Panda says Kurt Angle in his promo, I am not saying that he is not a fan of the black people. I do remember that. I think they were playing that for comedy. I mean, he said it. I think that was when Daivari was with him, right? They had Daivari as his manager for a time. Yeah, he said he does not like the black people. That was something else. Zantara, no, we're reminiscing about these all-time classic WWE storylines. I am not talking about that subject myself. Snitsky kicking the baby, that was quality TV. I laughed uproariously when he did that. That is absolute classic quality TV. As is musical chairs in Winnipeg. They did musical chairs, and Ric Flair shoved Stacy Keibler out of the way so that he could continue the game. Never forget that Kurt Angle said, I like to play with little boys on Rey Mysterio. Kurt was great. That's one of his best promos. Bret Hart says Kurt Angle doesn't like the black people, but he had a black son in Jason Jordan. That's a good point. He did have a black son. Marcus says, I just looked up that Vince segment about The Undertaker's wife. What the hell? I swear to God, until I had seen that floating on social media, this is a while ago, I had completely forgotten about that. I did not have any memory of that whatsoever. Joey says, don't forget about Piggy James. What a class act, Vince and Kevin Dunn. Yeah, we all know how highly Kevin Dunn thinks of women over the years. Mr. Diva Search over there. Mario DeRose, $4.99 Super Chat, was watching WrestleMania 10 and 11 back-to-back. Why was there so much hype for celebrities back then? Was it that important? Vince thought it was. They were trying to drum up interest in the product and trying to make it must-see and feel special. And, you know, business was not great. Those were bad years for the company. I mean, 94 was the start of the steroid trial, and they had the heat of the government on them, so they were still kind of reeling from that. They lost Hogan. Hogan was gone. He was their golden goose for so many years. 95 was just... Yeah, I mean, 95 was just a terrible year. I mean, it was... It had its moments. There were a lot of talented guys on the roster, and you had Hakushi and Owen Hart, and obviously Brett was there, and... They had that, but then you had the Allied Powers, and you had the Blue Brothers, and you had all the ridiculous gimmicks, and Isaac Yankum, and the fucking, you know, the plumber, and the garbage man, and the fucking goon, and it's like, you know, clearly Vince McMahon was not being drug tested during that time. So if celebrities, any celebrity they could bring in, I mean, I think they paid like $500,000 or something to Lawrence Taylor to come in to do that match. And they got Pamela Anderson, and they got Jenny McCarthy, and they got the guy from NYPD Blue, right, Nick Turturro, and they got the kid from Home Improvement, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, and they, what are the celebrities that they bring in? Well, in 94, they had Burt Reynolds, who was already on a downswing by then. They had Rhonda Shear, who used to host that USA Network Up All Night stuff, and she had the, you know, she had the, yeah. Who else did they have in 94? Who'd they bring in? Weren't there more names? Little Richard. Little Richard and Cy Sperling, the guy from the Hair Club for Men. And hey, you know what? I just figured out what happened. I just figured it out. Guys, I figured it out. This Shawn Michaels is the newest client of the Hair Club for Men. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's how he got his hair back. He's on one of these hair growth things. Don't they have like the Boston Clinic, and they have all kinds of like these remedies now? Shawn Michaels, one of the storylines, I'll bet, in this 2K22 game is that he's on one of these hair regrowth things, and maybe what he's doing, he's in the performance center and he's showing off his new hair to the ladies. And that's why Beth Phoenix has that look on her face. She's like, oh my God, I got to get out of here. He won't shut up about his fucking hair. I just figured it out. We just figured out one of the storylines in the game. He's going around telling all the women about his new hair. I can't wait for these cutscenes. These cutscenes are going to be something else, man. These cutscenes are going to be something else. Somebody wanted an update on Jason Jordan. He's still working behind the scenes as an agent. And it doesn't look like he's going to be wrestling ever again. Which is unfortunate, because he was... As young as he was, you know, I'm sad they broke up American Alpha, but he was on his way. And his injury was serious enough. I mean, it's been years, right? So never say never. We've seen people come back after fucking 5, 7, 9 years. But no update on him getting back in the ring. So. HBK got a prescription for Rogaine. He was so excited in that image. He's like showing it off to Sara Del Rey and all the women. He's cruising for ladies in the performance center. Beth looks like she suddenly gained the power to look into other dimensions. She looked like she was in a trance. Jason Jordan is another Richie Steamboat. Sad. Yeah, Richie Steamboat. He had that back injury. He never came back. I don't know what kind of wrestler he would have been, though. I mean, as great as his father is, that doesn't mean that he would have been another Ricky Steamboat. I didn't see enough of him. I saw some of the matches he had, like at FCW. But Jason Jordan, he was having good matches, you know, and they obviously had him in a pretty high up position on the card. Hell, by now, he probably would have been world champion 2 or 3 times. the way they just kind of give titles away to people. It's unfortunate, you know, it sucks. HBK isn't just a member, he's also a client. HBK has been sponsored by Keeps. We got some more messages coming in. Hey, Curtis Tally, thank you for the $4.99. He says, your podcast is the only reason I'm still watching wrestling today. I still go back to listen to your buy or sell bids. Thank you for the content. Well, thank you, Curtis. I appreciate that. I'm glad that I can keep you in the loop on what's going on. The good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. Chris Madsen just joined, fashionably late. He's been a channel member for 10 months. Says he always listens to this on his work shift in the morning and just wants to say the WWE entrance themes have gone downhill. You can barely hear them. Is it just me? No, it's not just you. There were a lot of people who came out in those Royal Rumble matches last week. They played the music and I had no fucking idea who it was. I don't know. I don't remember there being another period in WWE history where the theme music overall was this awful. And they've got some really good theme. I love Bobby Lashley's theme. Like, there are and Roman Reigns, his theme is fucking kick-ass. Like, there's some really good ones, but my God, are there some bad ones. They're just generic. Even what they changed Shayna Baszler's song to, it's just generic nothing. It's like they're not putting any real effort into it. Theme music is very important to a wrestler. You got to have good theme music. Samoan fan, Vince McMahon beat God in a match once. He did. Hulkling 93, speaking of celebrity appearances, WWE barely mentions Chuck Norris from Survivor Series 94. I always thought it was odd. It's Chuck effing Norris. No, they show it sometimes when he kicks Jeff Jarrett. They sneak it into some video packages every now and then. He didn't do anything else. I mean, what's there to talk about? He showed up once, he kicked Jeff Jarrett, and that was it. He didn't do anything else. I don't even think he ever got in the ring. Jason Case, buy or sell or rent. Mauro's Mamma Mia, Shane's Booyah, or Vic Joseph's Ooh! I would buy on Mamma Mia. I would rent Booyah, and I would sell on Vic Joseph's. Just because he does it way too often. Shane would usually just stick like one booyah when he would. This is when Shane was doing commentary on Sunday Night Heat back in 98. He would always yell like booyah and like, it was like, oh, but he wouldn't constantly do it the way that Vic Joseph is constantly going, oh, oh, oh. So I have to sell on that. Rizzo, did we ever find out how Jordan got hurt? I love this chat. I don't know if it was a singular incident or if it was something that just built up over time. You know, he was a three-sport athlete, so who knows? It could have been something that just built up from his amateur days. I don't know. I don't know if it was like, you know, people talk about the Shawn Michaels injury on the edge of the casket. And by the way, it wasn't just that. I mean, it was something that built up over time. But they kind of point to that moment, Austin being dropped on his neck. You know, it's not talked about a lot. Austin had neck issues even before that. But obviously, Owen dropping him on his head exacerbated those issues. But it's not like his neck was totally fine, and then one day it wasn't because Owen dropped him on his head. He had neck issues before that. I think his spinal stenosis would have been an issue no matter what. There you see the dead demon on your screen. Poor Finn Balor. They really did. Boy, you know, you talk about let it play out. I'm still waiting for that. I'm still waiting for that finish to play out when the rope broke in the match with Roman Reigns. I thought they would explain it. I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting for my explanation. Rest in peace to the demon. Lone Wolf says COVID tested positive for Chuck Norris. I love it. It's like when Chuck Norris goes to bed at night, you know, the people check under their bed for the boogeyman. It's the opposite. The boogeyman checks under his bed for Chuck Norris before he goes to bed. Chuck Norris doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the world down. Let's see. We got Samoan fan. Shane once joined Vince's Kiss My Ass Club. He did. He did at WrestleMania 22. Hamwall says it's Finn against the rope at WrestleMania. May as well. He might shove him in a battle royal at WrestleMania at this rate. Unbelievable. Yep. Sheamus has spinal stenosis. He does. Sheamus has spinal stenosis as well. And it just, it gets progressively worse over time. But that's the nature of any kind of contact sport, you know? Skywalker, thank you for the $9.99. The Russo on a pole. He says, buy or sell. Win the Royal Rumble and headline WrestleMania, or win Money in the Bank and cash in and win the title on Raw or SmackDown. Obviously, I would much rather win the Royal Rumble. The real purse money is in the Royal Rumble and going to WrestleMania. That's where you make the big bucks. Not cashing in my Money in the Bank on fucking 205 Live over here. Yes, Boucher, hit that like button. I think let's break away from this here and get down to brass tacks, shall we?
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
It is time to be the booker. It is that time of the week. We do this segment every week at the end of the Dynamite stream where I'm going to, and it's actually the perfect time to be doing this because it is WrestleMania season. We are talking about the main events of WrestleMania, right? We got two nights of WrestleMania this year. And so we are going to go ahead and we're going to try to book our own WrestleMania main event. I'm feeling in a very triple threat mood. So why don't we do a triple threat this week? We're going to do a three-way dance at WrestleMania. So we'll pick three names and see what we come up with here. We'll take her for a spin. Well, would you look at that? Speak of the devil. We were just talking about this man. We were showing his amazing hair in the game. We have Shawn Michaels in the WrestleMania. He's had a few WrestleMania main events in his day. I like where this is headed. Shawn Michaels is the first participant. The second participant is Kofi Kingston. Yeah, all right. Let's see if we can improve on that with number three. Shawn Michaels, Kofi Kingston, and Stone Cold Steve Austin as the WrestleMania main event. Well, I mean, look, we got Austin and Michaels in their prime, let's say, in the main event. It almost doesn't even matter who they're in there with. And Kofi's not a bad person to be in the ring with. It's just he's not a star on that level, and he never will be. But he's a hell of an athlete. He can bump around for a Stone Cold. Kofi would probably do a hell of a sell job on the stunner. Kofi would be there to eat the pin. That's exactly right. Hamwall said it in the chat. Kofi takes the pin in this triple threat. The only question is it Shawn who goes over this time, or is it Austin who wins? But I call that a winner. I call that one a winner. So let's switch over to the ladies. And we'll do the same thing. We'll do a triple threat. See what we come up with here. This is the night one main event of WrestleMania here with the women. The first participant is Piper Niven. Dewdrop. I guess I have to call her by her WWE name. Dewdrop, who actually, if you don't really pay attention, is actually a hell of a wrestler. If you've never seen her work even before she came to the main roster. So we've got Dewdrop. We've got Nikki Bella. I see where this is going. Dewdrop, Nikki Bella, and Ivory in the main event of WrestleMania. That ain't no WrestleMania main event. But Kofi Kingston, Shawn Michaels, and Stone Cold Steve Austin, that's a hell of a main event. That is a hell of a main event. So we did get on the men's side. This is the first Be the Booker, by the way, for February. We're starting a new month. January was a horrible month for Be the Booker. So I'm hoping that this is the start of something positive with this segment. And on the men's side, I think that was a pretty good match. Don Juan says, I made a video. More of a vlog video in a way. I hope I make it big so I can be like Solomonster. Oh, well, Don Juan, I appreciate that. You didn't tell me what the vlog is about. You can tweet me a link or something. Maybe I could take a look at the vlog. Yeah, Santiago. See, the problem is I think that the selection is more limited in the women's. What I have to do is I have to create one of my own. I'm going to have to go and create one. Actually, you know what? If Steve is watching or listening, my good buddy Steve Mello, Mr. Graphics Artist himself, he helps make the magic happen here on this channel. Maybe I can huddle with him and figure out a way to create my own, because then I could just put everybody in there. I'll put myself in there. I'll put podcasters in there. I'll put wrestling journalists in there. We'll put everybody in there. Can you imagine me doing a Be the Booker one week and it comes up Brock Lesnar against fucking Dave Meltzer or something? I mean, we could really have some fun with it, but I have to create one myself, because otherwise, you know, I mean, I'm not going to wait for somebody else to make it. Now that I said that out loud, I kind of want to see that. Brock Lesnar against Dave Meltzer. We could do Ronda Rousey, right, against Sean Ross Sapp or something like that. Lone Wolf with the Russo on a pole, bro. $10 super chat. Beth looks like she did it for The Rock. And Samoan fan, remember when Stephanie was pregnant and Vince wanted to make a storyline where either he or Shane would be the father of her child? Yes, I do. I do remember that. This man is sick. He is demented. Thought we already knew this. Brian Danielson against Orange Cassidy against Solo Monster in a triple threat match. Hey, if I put this new animation together, it could happen. It could happen. I just have to figure out how to create one of these things. Now it's gonna take time now. And now I have a new project for myself. Yeah, I would say Ultimate Mix. I would say Vince has no chill. I will say he is always willing to go the extra mile for business. It's just that some of the decisions he makes creatively. Look, business-wise, this company is making money hand over fist, mostly off their TV contracts. If the TV contracts go away, they're in a lot of trouble. But they're making a lot of money. They're as big as they've ever been. They're trying to corporatize even more. It's why they brought in someone like Nick Khan. I think the company will be sold one of these years. It's just a matter of time. So, I mean, Vince has accomplished everything he set out to do. He wanted to turn the company into something big. He turned it into something big. He wanted to be a millionaire and a billionaire. He's a billionaire. You know, what else is left to do other than sell to a fucking Disney or an Amazon or an NBC or something like that? Creatively is a completely different story. All they've proven is that they can continue to make money even with a shit product. I don't know. To me, I would have more pride in what I put out on television. So maybe that's just me. I love how everybody, you know, when all the e-drones, whenever, you know, I comment on something and if there's a terrible storyline or a payoff or whatever. Oh, well, the company makes a lot of money. You know, I guess the Solo Monster thinks he could do a better job of running the company. They still make money. How does the fact that they still make money, what does that have to do with some of these god-awful fucking storylines that they do on television? What does that have to do with it? They don't answer that question. They just throw it back in your face. Well, they're making money. They're making money. Yeah, they're making money all these other ways. They're not making money off some of these stupid storylines. They're making money because they have 3 hours of content every week. What the content is, that's what I'm concerned about. That's my concern. Oh, they make money. They make money. It's like a pull string doll. You know, they have their expressions. They have their responses. It's the same shit all the time. Ooh, they make money. They make money. Ooh. Idiots. Just like Mr. Micah in the chat. Another fucking moron. Anyway. It's right. You know what? Bret Hart, that's a good point. Says street drugs do a lot of money too. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Crack cocaine, heroin, meth, they sell a lot of money too. Much like a lot of these storylines, they're not good for you either. All right, guys, this has been fun. Thank you for hanging out with me here on a Wednesday night. Again, I very much enjoyed that main event tonight. I thought it was quite good, and look forward to the rematch, which I'm sure is going to happen at Revolution in 1 month, right? March 6th, I believe, is the pay-per-view. I'm going to be live back with you on Friday night. We'll talk SmackDown, and we'll talk Rampage. A couple of title matches on Rampage and on SmackDown. I would have to think we might get another Brock Lesnar appearance. We better. I wasn't a big fan of getting Jovial Brock after he got screwed out of the championship on Monday. So I'm waiting for and expecting murderous Rampage Brock Lesnar to show up. And so hopefully he'll be there and they'll continue that storyline on SmackDown on Friday night. But I'll be here live with you. And then I guess that's the last stream for the week. And then we'll do episode 742. We have a lot to get into there, including the Shane McMahon stuff. And so we'll talk about that this weekend. Here's the poll one last time. Go vote at Solomonster on Twitter. And I will see you guys back here on Friday night for SmackDown and Rampage. Until then, stay sexy. I'll see you guys Friday night.